The views expressed on the following show may not be those of the hosts, guests, or WSPN Skidmore Radio. Talk Saratoga is produced by Saratoga Broadcasting Incorporated and may not be reproduced in part or in whole unless expressed written approval is given. Now, here are the hosts of Talk Saratoga, Rick Thompson and a Saratoga All-Star.
Okay, good morning. And this is Talk Saratoga. I'm your host, Rick Thompson, and we're here with two Saratoga All-Stars today. We got Ben LaPointe from the Children's Museum of Saratoga and Barbara Owens, who's the Director of Development, and I should say Ben's the Digital Media Coordinator. And Barbara's taking a tour of the college right now, and she'll join us in a couple minutes. So, we'll welcome her when she gets here. Morning, Ben.
Good morning, Rick.
It's good to see you again.
It's good to see you as well. It's good to be here.
I think it was back in December when you were here last.
Yeah, it was a little while ago.
Yeah, it's good to see you again, though.
Yeah.
I know you've been real busy.
Yes, we have.
The Children's Museum closed in October, was it?
We closed down at the turn of the year.
At the turn of the year, okay.
Yep.
And you were on Caroline Street.
Yep.
And you announced some great news that you're moving.
Yes.
And yes. It's going to be in the state park.
Yep. So we're moving to the Lincoln Baths building in the state park. We're going to be, the building is kind of divided into three sections. So there's front, middle, and the back. So we're taking up the back section. We have the southern side of the lower part. That's where some of the offices are going to be. And we have some classrooms, and that's where the front desk will be. And then you head upstairs, and we have the entirety from end to end of the upstairs, which is almost exclusively exhibit space. There's going to be a couple classrooms on each end and then some other little spaces, but for the most part, it's just going to be exhibits.
Okay. The museum, can you give us a little background on the museum, like about when it started and...
Let's see.
I know this isn't really your area, but, you know, if we can...
Yeah. So it was 31 years ago, I believe. There was a group of local women who found that that the area was just lacking in this kind of amenity, these kind of services. So they came together and they raised some money to start... the first iteration of the Children's Museum. And obviously that took off. People liked it. They found that to be a valuable service. And so over time, we've been able to grow. We started out on Phyla Street. And then at some point, we moved to Caroline. I'm so bad with dates.
Yeah, that's okay.
But, we made our way to Caroline Street. And, you know, we have, at this point, just kind of grown beyond the capacity there. I mean, pre-COVID, we were filling the building, especially on the weekends when a lot of people are in there. There's sometimes that, you know, the rooms were just packed, just completely packed with people. Which is always great, but at the same time, you know, you kind of want that room to breathe, and we obviously saw the need for extra room.
Sure.
And I'm not sure exactly how it came about, but, you know, talks came about of moving to the Lincoln Baths, and at first I thought I was like, you know, we'll see, but, you know, obviously it's come true.
Yeah.
Which is great. I mean, we're really excited about it.
Well, the thing, too, is, as you said, you know, over the years... something doesn't grow unless the need is there.
Right.
And the Children's Museum has been, I mean, everybody talks about it. And now you had kids going there, and now their parents.
Right.
And they're bringing their kids there. And one of the things people that I talk to say about it, it's very interactive. You just don't go there and, you know, it's an interactive museum.
Right. Yeah, and in that sense, I think it can be kind of a misnomer. The idea of a museum, a lot of, you know, you think of like more adult museums where you go and you look at stuff. There
right.
might be some interactives here and there, but for the most part, things are behind glass or behind rope, and you're just there to look and read and that kind of a thing. And so in that sense, we're not really a museum because the idea is that you're interacting with as much as possible. You know, we want you to be able to do the things. I mean, because our demographic is children, and that's how they learn.
Sure.
I mean, I remember one of my friends was talking about, like, learning language. And, you know, as an adult, we learn language by, like, studying and that kind of thing. But that's not how we learn how to speak in the first place. It's just you pick things up and you just kind of play with them and just kind of learn and just you get the contextual understanding. And that's just a great way for kids to learn, is just being able to just explore. And they don't use it the quote-unquote right way, but maybe they come up with a better way to use it for themselves, and it just stimulates them and gets them engaged.
That's the word, stimulate.
Yeah.
It stimulates their interest in something that they can probably carry on if they like it, you know. And as they get older, they take on different things, maybe relating to something that they did as a little kid.
Yeah, and I mean, you know, I'm sure everybody's heard the stories about, you know, I became such and such a career because of some teacher or some time I spent when I was a kid. You know, this particular teacher really turned me on to science or math or English, or, you know, my time spent at the museum made me want to be an educator or made me want to join the museum field and that sort of a thing. And, you know, it's just really good when you can experience something and engage with it, as opposed to, I mean, there is definitely value in academic learning, but it just doesn't give you that really hands-on experience that, like, you know, there's a lot of things I learned in college and school that when I actually get out in the field and you experience that, it's sometimes it's like, wow, this is way better than I thought. And sometimes you're like, oh, I didn't realize that this is what it was going to actually be. And I think that, you know, whether it goes positive or negative, that learning experience is just really valuable, so you can better understand who you are as a person and where you want
to
go.
Well, you have to have negative experiences. I mean, that's how you learn.
Right.
But see, we're a product of our environment.
Mm.
And, I mean, family life has a lot to do with how we grow and learn, but so are the things we do, well, when we go to, like, the Children's Museum or a museum of art or a playground. I mean, that all adds to what type of person we're going to grow up to be.
Right.
So, as you said, if you're involved in hands-on things like the Children's Museum or going even to an orchestra, a SPAC, I mean, you learn to appreciate things. Not everybody does, but you may pick something that you enjoy.
Yeah.
I know as a kid, in eighth grade, I went to Catholic school. We didn't have a music program. So between eighth and ninth grade, the public school offered Catholic school students to take music. So we could pick up a musical instrument. Mm-hmm. Of course, by that time, you know, I was tone deaf and couldn't play. And they only gave you a choice of three, so I ended up with the clarinet. But one of the nice things that they did, SPAC had given them free tickets for the ballet and the orchestra, and we would come up once a week. They would take us in a bus once a week up to SPAC. Mm-hmm. Now, here we are, eighth, ninth grade. I don't know how old that would be, probably teenager. You know, I got to appreciate not every ballet, but, you know, I saw the Nutcracker, and I loved that. And the Philharmonic Orchestra used to be up here, you know, for 3-4 weeks. And you get an appreciation. Now, if I didn't do that, I would have never been exposed to that.
Right.
And learned to appreciate some of that.
Yeah, and even a different context can change your opinion of things. Like, I have nothing against jazz music, but it's not something that I listen to. But if I know that there's live jazz music out, like, I'm there. I love listening to it live. Like, that's just so great. But if you were to say, hey, let's listen to some CDs or records, I'll be like, no, I'm not really interested in that. I don't know. It's there's an experience there. There's the atmosphere. And there's the socialization. I think that's a really big aspect of it, is, like, not just experiencing something, but experiencing something in a group. Even if you don't have any ties to that group, it's just having that basic human experience of just being out somewhere and enjoying things together.
Well, that, you know, you had mentioned the pandemic and the Children's Museum. I think one of the things, even for kids, it was very hard, the socialization aspect of it.
Right.
Kids couldn't get together to play or talk with each other or experience things like the Children's Museum. And that hurt a lot of children. And we can kind of adapt to not being social for a little bit. But kids, you know, it's kind of tough. So I think Because you were closed right down during pandemic, correct?
Yeah, I think pretty much the same time as everybody else. There may have been a delay. I wasn't paying close attention right at that time. I was kind of crossing my fingers, hoping for the best. But
sure.
Yeah, before the end of March, you know, just like everybody else, everything was closed, quarantined down. Luckily, it was really easy for us to switch to remote. And, you know, at first I thought I was going to love working from home. And as far as I can tell, you know, people that I've talked to, it's kind of the consensus that it was nice for a time, and maybe, you know, here and there. But, like, I feel like a lot of people, they'd rather just go to work and do work at work.
We are social people.
Yeah.
And
exactly. Social. Like, it's not just that you have this place that you can kind of separate work and home. But just the people that you work with, you know, hopefully you enjoy the people that you work with. And have that extra socialization and the ability to just interact with people and just exchange ideas. And then the immediacy of interacting, whether it's work-related or, you know, it might be a personal conversation at that moment, you know, having that immediate back and forth. I know we live in the days of, you know, emails and texts and things, and I've tried to adapt myself, but I just don't find that to be – it's just not as rewarding. Like, you'll text somebody and then – it's 5, 10, 20, an hour later, and then they finally respond, and it just doesn't have that same cadence of an actual conversation.
Well, that's why I think, you know, we get back to what the Children's Museum does, and especially with, you know, with the kids interacting. Email, you don't know the person. You can't get a facial expression from them.
Right.
And that, a lot of things, that's the thing about wearing masks all this time. You talk to somebody, you see their eyes.
Yeah,
I wouldn't know what you look like if I met you out if you didn't have a mask on. So you need that contact and the eye contact and watch the mouth move. And you don't get that with online. And I think having something like the Children's Museum where it can be interactive and the kids are right there and they're having fun with each other and learning something is a better experience than being on the computer.
Oh, yeah.
Well, we're joined now by Barbara Owens. She took a tour of the college, and she knows a little bit more about Skidmore. And Barbara's the Director of Development for the Children's Museum of Saratoga. Good morning, Barbara.
Good morning. Thank you for having me, and I apologize for being late.
Don't apologize. There's no...
You weren't late.
Nobody apologizes. Nobody apologizes here. I don't know if you ever saw... You know, every time somebody says that to me, I always... you know, I'm a lot older than you two put together, but... The Love Story was a movie with Ally McGraw, and
yes,
there was a thing in there, love means never having to say you're sorry. So every time somebody says I'm sorry for being late, I said, no, love means never having to say you're sorry.
But a beautiful campus, and I was, you know, I was familiar with the campus ahead of time, but now I'm really familiar with the campus.
It is. It's a big campus, and you can get lost easily in here.
I noticed.
I have done many a times.
Yeah.
I mean, I know how to get from Clinton Street to the studio, and I work for a bus company independent. We transport kids to special needs schools, but we also transport Skidmore kids to the barn, the horse barn down there. And it's just take a right from instead of a left, and you go up and pick them up there, and you don't know how many times I bypassed that and ended up on North Broadway. And it's like, hey, I need to go to the Children's Museum and get interactive directions here, you know? All right, so I want to start. We've been talking a little bit about the museum and things we talked about the last time, the move, and, you know, when it was started and how it's grown. But first I'd like to just have people know a little bit about you. So, Ben, I want to know what the digital media coordinator, your position.
So, it's I have a very broad set of responsibilities. As we all do, we wear a lot of different hats in the museum. So, I came on as an educator originally. I've been educating for, at this point, 13, give or take, years in many different contexts. The executive director recognized that I had a very broad skill set. I've just done a lot of different things, and so she started to find different things that I could help with. So I took over the social media. With the pandemic, we tried to do videos. They're not as successful as we hope, but it is still a way to kind of reach out to the public while we're not able to be open and actually have people come on in person. I also helped to set up the events. So last year's Big Truck Day was actually the first event that I had ever taken care of, and I was, you know, I'm crossing my fingers that it's not a fluke, but everybody said that I did a really good job. You know, we have some more events coming up in the near future. And then there's just kind of the myriad of different little tiny tasks here and there that we all have to help out with. I did construction in the past, so if something's kind of rogue, it's like, Ben, can you take a look at this and see what you can do? And sometimes I can, and sometimes I can't.
Job security, man.
Yeah, that's
job
right. Security. No, it's true.
But I'll tell you know how you're doing a good job is if every Friday you show up and they give you a paycheck.
Yep.
You know you're doing a good job.
Yes.
That's right.
But you said 13 years you've been there?
No, I've been at the museum here for about 2.5 years. I think just a little shy of that. I started out tutoring when I took my second stint through college, which prior to that experience, if you had said I would be an educator in my future life, I would have laughed at you. I didn't think I could ever teach somebody things that I learned in an intuitive way. And I just didn't feel like I could convey that very well. But, you know, when I was on campus, I just needed a little bit of money. So I did tutoring and supplemental instruction and found out that I was actually pretty good at it. And so after I left that and not realizing exactly how things worked, I was hoping to get into the field, not realizing that that's more of like you do internships and that starts you in the field. I was looking for a job, and that was right after that financial crash. I think it was 2008. Yeah. And it was just job prospects were very low because things that I thought a bachelor's degree would be good for, they were like preferred to have a master's degree. And I'm like, oh, dear. And so I ended up working for Sears for a year. It was very discouraging trying to find jobs. And finally, I didn't really want to move that far away, but I saw this job in Georgia, and I'm like, they'll hire me because I don't want to go that far. And sure enough, about a month later, I was planning to go to Georgia, and I made my way down and spent 3 years down there, went to Connecticut, came back up here, did some preschool stuff, and now I'm at the museum, and I can't say that I would look back and change anything about that.
Excellent. And Barbara's director of development, don't tell me you've been doing this for more than 2 years, because you two guys look like you're in your early 20s. And when you're saying
you.
About 10 years, I can't believe it.
You.
No. So what's the director of development and what's your position?
Yeah, so director of development is a fundraiser. In a nonprofit, you know, somebody needs to raise the funds because, you know, every nonprofit brings in money through, you know, like for us, for the museum, it's admissions and just what Ben was saying, educational programs. So that's our earned income. What I bring in is the unearned income, the donations. I write the grants. I also look for corporate support. And, you know, and special events, which Ben mentioned, you know, we have the Big Truck Day. We do some other special events where we just try to raise money for the museum. There's a lot of programs that the museum does that have to be funded somehow. And I don't know if you touched on those before I got here. But
nope, not yet.
The museum has programs that are reduced cost. Those are aimed at getting the kids who, you know, their family might use an EBT card or they have SNAP benefits. Mm-hmm. They're, you know, traditionally low to moderate income families. Many of these kids also, you know, when they live in an area that might be a little impoverished or a lot impoverished, they go to a Title I school oftentimes. And the sad truth of it is when you look at the results of where people live and what schools they go to, the academic standards are often suffering. Yep. So a Title I school, sadly, is often a school that is struggling academically. So we do a lot of programs where we're either bringing programs to these schools or we are doing things to bring kids and their families into the museum at a reduced cost. You know, if anybody needs extra hands-on learning opportunities, it's these kids.
Well, you know, I mean, not to veer off too much, but I belong to the Kiwanis Club.
Right.
In Saratoga. And we have Kiwanis, a lot of people don't know this, but the state of Kiwanis, state of New York, has a camp in Rome, New York for children for a 4-week period, and then special needs kids with one-on-one aids for 2 weeks. And the club sponsor kids to go. Now, a lot of these kids can't even go to a beach because, you know, I mean, their situation. So children need to be exposed to different things, and it's great that nonprofits can help that, you know, be a bridge there for them.
Yeah, absolutely. And just what you said, you know, Kiwanis, Rotary, Lions, all of those organizations that are in town, you know, in partnership with the corporations that we have, and just generous individuals who give. Everybody is really recognizing that there are a lot of kids that they just need a helping hand.
Well, sure. Well, you've got one of the hardest jobs.
Oh, I will not disagree with you.
Yeah, fundraising for a nonprofit is tough because I don't think there's a day goes by that you have to come up with some sort of a, you know, plan on how am I going to get out there to attract this person or this organization.
Absolutely. You hit the nail on the head. Right now, as you know, as the museum plans to move, you know, I mean, what a time to plan construction of a new facility in the middle of a pandemic. But at the same time, you know, how can you not do what is the best for the organization? And we had an opportunity that we couldn't pass up. You know, to move to the Lincoln Baths building right on Broadway, I mean, what a great spot. But, you know, the campaign is, you know, roughly $3.5 million. And even now, I mean, you know, we've had unbelievable generous gifts from, you know, from people who are our Saratoga citizens, as well as corporations and foundations in Saratoga. And, you know, while those things have put us far, you know,
right
over the starting line, we're, you know, as we close in on the end of this campaign, we're still $300,000 away from the goal. And, you know, raising that last $300,000 is hard.
It's tough. Yeah, it is. Because most of the time, your bigger donations come in the beginning.
They do. They always do.
And towards the end, you know, it's hard to find out who to go to now because they've already given and things. So,
yeah.
But there's always people out there.
There are. And Saratoga is one of the most generous, kind places. And the city of Saratoga, the county of Saratoga, they recognize that the Children's Museum is an asset. It's a resource that's been here for over 30 years, and I can't believe how generous people are. And when they share their memories of, like, either they brought their children here or the people say, I was a kid, I came here.
That's right.
My birthday party here.
That's what Ben and I were talking about before.
Yeah.
Now it's children that used to go there, and now they're adults and bring their kids there, and that's a nice thing.
It's lovely. It really is.
Now, do you have personal contact with the Board of Supervisors?
The Board of Directors at the museum?
No, the Board of Supervisors. I mean, you get any grants from them,
from
the county?
So we've actually applied for grants. You know, we're just like any other, you know, applicant. So actually we currently have an application into Saratoga County. We've also got one into the city of Saratoga. And that one will be to provide exactly what we were talking about, those free and reduced programs, especially the housing that exists around where the baths are. There's lots of low-income housing in that area. And so we're proposing that we'll bring some programs right there to, like, the rec center.
Oh, beautiful.
So,
excellent.
So fingers crossed.
Yeah.
It would be great to have the funding to be able to do those programs.
So we'll talk a little bit now about the renovations and how they're coming along. And I talked to Ben a little bit about before the show, but, you know, how it's going along and time framing maybe. I know when you're doing an upgrade and plus you're moving to a new place, there's a lot of hidden things that happen sometimes time constraints can have a bearing on what's going on too.
Yeah, when we started this, and again, it fell into our laps, and we were like, we can't pass this up. But knowing that, you know, just what I was talking about, like, you know, when you're talking with earned income and how you need to stay afloat as a nonprofit by, you know, bringing people into your facility, we knew that we couldn't be closed down for all that long. So this project suddenly became like a year-long project. And many times when a museum's being built, it's, you know, 2, 3, 4 years.
Mm-hmm.
A very restricted timeline. The facility itself being built out, they're doing a wonderful job. Everything seems to be on target there. But some of the the setbacks that you don't anticipate, you know, supply chain stuff that...
Oh, tell me, yeah. You
know, there's always something.
Yeah, so, you know, everything might be great, except for if the elevator doesn't arrive, you can't open the door.
Exactly.
No, the elevator has arrived.
Or if the elevator repairman can't arrive, you've got a problem.
So, yeah, but there is a fine orchestration between construction and... you know, the HVAC people and the electricians and the plumbers and of course, the people who are building the exhibits. Mm-hmm. They were coming from a variety of places. And they can only build them so fast.
I know.
So
I know. And like you said, with the pandemic, you want to put everything into a third gear.
It's not
possible sometimes, you know. But you'll get there. I mean, is there a target that you're looking at now?
There is. So we often have said that we had hoped to open in June of 2022, and that's only a few months away, as
you
know.
Yeah, it is. Oh, I can't believe it'll be here before a blink.
Yeah.
I can't believe it's March already.
But I think in all actuality, it'll probably be closer to July, just knowing that, you know, some things get slowed down a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
So, but we do hope that we'll be able to bring in a couple of groups ahead of time just to try things out, make sure that everything's working like it's supposed to before our grand opening, which hopefully will be the week of the 4th of July.
Now, I'm skipping down on some of the things here. I may not go in order, but I see you have a gala coming up with a birthday with 9 Miles East.
Yeah, so normally the museum celebrates its birthday with a huge gala. And in the past, you know, they've done it, as an in-person event. Dinner and auction. The pandemic put a quick close to that, and we've been doing a gala to go, which was just really like ordering out dinner, and you know, proceeds went to benefit us. So knowing that we couldn't do another in-person gala this year, just because of course it would have had to have been planned, and you know, who would have known when mandates would have been lifted.
Right.
So the wonderful people at 9 Miles have allowed us to have on March 31st.
Yep.
Any meal that you order, whether it's in the restaurant, online, call them on the phone, 20% of the proceeds will go to the museum.
Oh, great. Way.
Yeah. So that is a wonderful way to support us in lieu of having, you know, a gala.
Okay.
But our next big event is definitely Big Truck Day, and that's going to be August 7th. Is that correct? August 7th.
Yep.
August 6th.
Big Truck Day.
It's the first Saturday in August.
Right. Okay.
Yeah.
Saturday?
Yep.
Okay.
First Saturday in August. It's I'm really looking forward to it this year. Like as we were talking before, it's the first year. Last year was the first year that I did it, and you know, I was a little hesitant. I didn't want to push too far because I didn't want to put too much on myself, and then also, you know, as we were anticipating with the gala, we didn't know what the mandates were going to be. We didn't know what the policies were going to be. And we didn't want to get into a situation where we just had too many people and everything wasn't going to work out. So we kind of kept it back. But this year, I think that we can just kind of push forward full bore.
And the great thing about Big Truck Day, of course, is that it's an outdoor event.
Yes.
Okay.
It's usually at Maple Avenue.
Maple Avenue, and it will be there this year as well.
And is that a middle school or elementary school?
That's the middle school.
So Maple Avenue, middle school.
Right,
an outdoor event.
Yeah.
You know, kids get to check out trucks and rigs and all sorts of, like, equipment. The helicopter usually comes by and, you know, lands and takes off.
That's a big hit, too. Yep. Yeah.
A bunch of food vendors. And last year, we welcomed over 2,000 people as an outdoor event.
Yep.
It was wonderful. Well, it's, you know, over the course of, what, 3 hours, I think, is...
Four hours.
Yeah, that's amazing.
4 hours. Yeah.
That's amazing.
Yeah. And this year I think we did it last year, but this year for sure we're doing a quiet time. So, you know, some of our friends have some sensitivities to loud noises.
Right.
And one of the big exciting things about Big Truck Day is the helicopter taking off, the fire truck, you know, making the sirens go off and the horns.
Yep.
So we will have a quiet time during this year's Big Truck Day.
I think we're actually going to go for a quiet kind of bookend. So the first and the last hour, I think we're going to have that quiet time for those individuals because what I did notice last year is that at the last hour, there were still people there, but it kind of got a little thinned out. And I think in my mind, that's a good time to have another quiet hour and have people come in who would rather have that experience. We also, and I think people just didn't realize this, is that we had We had earplugs available for anybody who wanted them. And so this year, we're definitely going to make sure everybody is aware of that because, you know, you might not be able to come during those quiet times but still want that experience. And so we want to accommodate that as well.
Right.
So we will have those available.
And that's great because I love going to the Washington County Fair.
Oh, yeah.
And I work at the track in the summer as a security guard, so I can't go with my wife and our daughters now are grown, but they go. And so I take some of the downstate guards with me. They don't even know what a county fair is they have festivals down in Long Island and New York. The thing that amazed them the most was the size of tractors and the size of cows. They thought cows were the size of sheep.
Yeah, or a dog, right?
Yeah. And they love the tractor pull. And I don't go because of the noise.
Yep.
I wish I had earplugs. So I'm sitting there and it was like, I was like this because they didn't dare move the noise. So I can understand how you have to adapt to different aspects of what children
and we always want to be we always want to be mindful of accommodating people who have different needs, and that's tangentially that's another thing that going into this new space, when we first closed down at Caroline Street, we took that opportunity to try to adapt some of our exhibits. The fire truck, as most people will have seen, we added a ramp to that so that it was wheelchair accessible. And, moving into this new space, it was a paramount importance for us to make sure that we are accommodating, physical, emotional, and mental needs of different children because, it's easy to kind of take the average and go, well, if we just make it for the average person, then that's great, most people, but you got to think about those the outliers, those people who aren't part of that average group. Like they get kind of just pushed out all the time, and we just do not want that to be the case.
Yeah, well, I know it's for all children.
It is for
all children. It is. I take special needs kids to school through Upstate. We contract through Saratoga school districts, and the programs that are available today weren't available to special needs kids when I was growing up. And I think up to that point, and I can't remember, maybe it was the 70s or 80s when it changed over, that it became normal to make accommodations for special needs or older people. And that should be a part of our society.
Absolutely.
And now you think about that when you plan an event, it's just a normal thing. So that's great. And you talked about helicopter rides. They fascinate kids. I got to tell you.
Oh, yes.
When I was a kid, my father was the manager of the third Stewart's that was built in Gloversville. And every Saturday, every time you brought ice cream or milk, you got a coupon. And if you saved up so many coupons, every Saturday a helicopter would come down in the lot across the street and you could go on a helicopter ride.
Wow.
Well, being the kids of the manager, we used to go up every Saturday.
Yeah.
And boy, I'll tell you, that was the most fun thing because he'd always take us over our neighborhood and my friends would be down there waving, And that's got to be one of the best experiences that I had.
Well, but let us be clear, Rick. There are no helicopter rides.
I know, but what I'm saying is, though, that might be a fundraiser for somebody to sponsor helicopter rides.
That would be an awesome fundraiser.
See, you may have some corporations for the experience that kids could have.
Yeah.
It would be to take a helicopter ride with their parents.
Yes.
And, you never know. I know for me, it was like an unreal experience because...
And we have had some of the most amazing fundraising ideas come to us from the outside. A company or a corporation that tells us, have you thought about this? We'd love to do it with you. Those sorts of things they're great. They're just it's a wonderful way to raise funds and raise awareness. And we are always welcome to any of those.
Oh, sure. Yeah. All right. So you're increasing accessibility for physically, mentally, and economically challenged children and adults, and that's something you couldn't do on Caroline Street to a point because it was an older building probably, and to adapt it would have been more expensive, and at least out here, it's going to be new.
Yep.
So, and that'll be a lot better. Now, you said you had an elevator in the building?
We do. So, the new museum is built not only to ADA standards, but to universal accessibility standards. The elevator is absolutely huge. It's, I can't remember the size of it. It's the size of a room.
Wow.
So,
it's very large.
It is very large, yes. And, but there's still stairs available, too, for those
sure.
who want to climb the stairs. You know, people will gain entrance to the museum at the rear of the Lincoln Baths building. There's a ramp that goes to the entrance, and then the elevator will take you to the second floor, which is where most of the exhibits are. Most of the classrooms will be on the first floor.
That's the hot spot.
Okay. Now, I mean, this is, my show's not very serious all the time, but when you say Lincoln Baths, if you go there, you can't take a bath, right?
No, not any longer. I believe the Roosevelt Bath Building is the only one with active baths.
I thought maybe, you could go and take a bath.
But the interesting thing, though, is in the Lincoln Baths, the state has set aside a portion of that building that still has original baths with original furnishings.
The mineral baths and that.
Yeah, so you can see how it existed.
Well, that may be a good part of... Is it part of the museum?
It is not an official part of the museum. We are sort of the custodians of it, if you will. As museum people, many of the people that we work with, our executive director, for instance, our director of education, they both have degrees in museum studies, so they're aware of how to interpret, historical and,
artifacts. Historical piece,
absolutely.
You know.
And speaking of grants, we have actually written a grant so that we would be able to interpret that space, whether it's, that people would be allowed in at some point to look at the way, not only, it's not just the baths, there's equipment in there and how... this just water treatments were done. It's really fascinating and a little scary, I will tell you, because it's like something out of Frankenstein.
It's surreal. it's definitely surreal because you grow up and you see movies where you have those kind of things in there and you're like, you've never seen something like that before. And
sure.
then you actually experience something like that. I'm like, oh, this is real. Yeah, it feels a little weird to see a thing that I've only ever seen in movies.
Yeah, I mean, a lot of the stuff is from the 1930s.
Yep.
Yeah. There's lots of dials and things for water pressure. So it's a lovely glimpse into the past. There's so much rich history around the baths, and hopefully with some luck, we'll be able to interpret that at some point, and people might be able to get to see them.
And we're very lucky with being in a historical area, too. I mean, there's so much history in Saratoga that it relates to the park with the baths and the water. I mean, there were so many, the bottling plant that's now the car museum and that. You know, it's a great area for history, so, and that's got to be worked to the benefit of the museum, too, I would think. You have another possible event with...
Yes.
Why don't you talk about that?
So, right now, I'm talking with the Tri-City Valley Cats. We're hoping that we can get some of their staff to come on. We want to do the Science of Baseball. We're still kind of working on making sure we have the right dates that works for everyone. Because, the players have their schedule, and that means the staff has their schedule as well. And this is the first year that we've had the opportunity to do this. So, right now, it seems like it's a go, but I hesitate to say that it's definitive yet. We're at the point of setting a date.
Okay.
Probably August, September of this year, we think, right?
Maybe July.
Yeah. Yep. So, summertime of baseball, how fun.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
And you could meet Southpaw, is what I understand.
That is the highlight that we are looking to bring in. Then kids will be able to come in and kind of learn, what makes baseball tick on a scientific level, but also kind of, have that interaction with, Southpaw and some of the staff that come from them. And I think it's going to be really, really great.
Yeah, it'll be fun. I mean, anything like that for kids is amazing. Although for adults, we're in a quandary right now because of the strike. Major League Baseball is going to miss the first week as of now, and maybe more. But the Valley Cats aren't under that under that umbrella, so they'll be playing, they'll start their season regular. My Yankees, I don't know if they'll even play this year, but...
They'll work it out.
It'll work it out. Too much money involved. Anyway, so that'll be a great thing. Now, does the museum have any outside field trips for the kids, or is everything encapsulated in the building itself?
Well, we do two things. So, in the springtime is often a heavy time for us, where we're receiving field trips, right? The buses pull up, the kids, are visiting. And that's for all different age groups. Every program at the museum is geared towards specific, age groups or grades. But on the outside is the museum sending educators like Ben and like some of our other great skilled educators. They go out to the schools and they're actually doing programs and lessons right in the classrooms, hands-on stuff like the different projects, whether it's science or engineering-based.
Neat.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's excellent. We had, in Kiwanis, and we talked about stimulating children with hands-on events, and we had a member, he's retired now, but from his job, he was an engineer, and he came up with a program for kids. It wasn't a fundraiser, but we got money from corporations, bridge building with popsicle sticks to get children interested maybe in engineering, and they'd get an award for the best bridge or the bridge that fell apart from the first or whatever, but your programs stimulate children, and that's what, and we were talking about that earlier, Ben and I, that you have to, that's how children learn, is hands-on and different experiences that they may not in their everyday life because of different circumstances.
And an important part for us, too, is open-ended learning. So not everything comes with a specific set of directions. It's more like a prompt so that the kids can use their creativity and their ingenuity and, here is the popsicles to build the bridge, but, my bridge isn't going to look like yours and so on.
Yeah.
So with that prompt and then them just using that as a launching point, it's amazing what kids can do.
So interesting how many different iterations of a design you can get from very simple, set of instructions. Like, you just gotta, here are the constraints, and you'll get each little group or each student has a completely different concept of what to do. Some of them aren't going to work as well as others, but that's part of the learning process, is finding out what doesn't work as well as what does work.
Children learn at such an early age and can carry things through the rest of their life, I think, than trying to learn something as an adult. I know, learning languages. Children pick up languages a lot easier than adults, because even when you're in high school or college, it's tough to learn a language for a lot of people. But as kids, they pick up things pretty quick.
You're just mentally very pliable at that point, and you're just in a learning mode. Just taking all that information in, and then toying with it in your head, just figuring out how things work, finding out the context of things. As we were talking, learning a language when you're an adult, it's academic. You're studying the words and trying to interpret them. Whereas a kid, you're just this word can be spoken this way or it can be spoken this way. And it's just intuitive.
Yeah.
And there's a lot to that in learning that early, that it becomes intuitive and just part of who you are rather than something that you've learned later on.
And interestingly, the data and the statistics that we're being given from the Association of Children's Museums and other education groups that study children's learning is that when you are, a young child, pre-K, toddler age, when you have an exposure to math, science, engineering, you are far more likely to be successful later. So, it's funny because some people will say, what four-year-old's going to understand principles of engineering? Plenty of them if they've played with blocks or whatever.
Exactly.
But without that early exposure, they might not have the confidence that they can learn further or they can explore a subject
exactly
in a deeper way.
Well, I have a lot of Asian friends that that I've met over the years, and one of the things that they do as children is music. Introduce music at an early age, and that stimulates the brain. And I always thought there may be a correlation with that to how academically well they do as they get older, because they've been stimulated with that at an early age. And a lot of them become very, very good when they're young. I mean, you know, professionals when they're young. And so there's certain things, like you say, where they can use their imagination that will help them in their later years.
Yeah, and music is a perfect example. And we have some music programs that often go out from the museum. And it's interesting because, you know, music is both creativity, but music is math. Mm-hmm. And,
it's
I think amazing. In that regard, it engages, you know, that idea of, like, you know, you're the right side and the left side of the brain think mm-hmm. differently. And I think, you know, music itself does engage both sides of the brain. And it just, it kind of combines those two together. I think art, like, you know, the fine arts, to an extent, also the same thing, because, like, you can't just be creative, but then it's also, there's a technical aspect of learning, like, how the brush strokes work and how different paints work and that kind of a thing. So I remember I didn't like painting as much when I used acrylics, because acrylics are cheap and that's what you have in high school. And then one day somebody was just like, oh, here's my oil paints. And I was like, oh, I don't know how to use you. And I started using them. I'm like, oh my God, these are fantastic. I want to paint more.
Yeah.
It was just, it was a wild experience to kind of see that there's a different kind of paints and they work differently.
Yeah. And that's how you learn, you know. Now, you also have a satellite office. I don't know if you took in or you absorbed or you merged with a place in Troy.
Yeah, so there was another children's museum that was located in Troy. It was the Children's Museum of Science and Technology.
Right.
They closed their physical location. That was at the RPI Tech Park. You know, the pandemic was very hard on museums. In fact, 1 in 3 museums closed across the nation. So the Children's Museum of Science and Technology, when they decided to close their physical location, it was important, of course, for them to continue their educational programming. In fact, CMOST, Children's Museum of Science and Technology, they did more outside education than they did inside education. They had become so well known for their just wonderful programs that they were sending out to the community. They were called their outreach programs.
Mm-hmm.
And in fact, I think they were in just about like every school district in every county of the 11 capital region counties.
It seems as such, yes.
Yeah, it was unbelievable. So when they knew that they weren't going to open their doors again to the physical location, they asked us if we would enter into a management agreement with them. So the wonderful news of all of that is that the Children's Museum at Saratoga is now offering all of those fantastic outreach programs. So they have not gone anywhere. They still exist.
Okay.
And if, you know, if anybody wanted those to continue, and they have. We're already getting phone calls from all over and sending educators everywhere.
Those programs have kept us busy, the new schools that we have come into. And they're very appreciative that we are sticking with, you know, the quality that came from CMOST. You know, they're very happy with what we've brought and been able to kind of continue the legacy from that organization.
That's great.
And part of that, I think what you were talking about with the satellite location, it was always an important part of their museum to serve the children of Troy and Rensselaer County, the children of Albany County. And so we knew that we had to figure out a way to serve the children of Troy. So we actually have an opportunity to teach some programs out of the Troy Focus Lab, which is a new nonprofit in Troy. So that is still getting up and running right now. But with some luck and with again, the right funding, we will be able to teach classes out of downtown Troy.
That's neat.
And they're also, of course, looking at, you know, that a possible move to One Monument Square, as I think everybody in Troy has talked about for 100
right.
years. But you know, it looks like it's possible now, a little closer than it had been.
Okay.
And with some luck, we'll be teaching some classes there as well.
Now, do you have to fundraise for them too? Or?
Yes. I mean, it is a never-ending battle. You know, the world of nonprofits is always
right.
looking for, you know, generous support and sponsorship.
So anybody out there who's listening is one of those people.
Right, that's right. Yes.
Any way you can make money, you take it, you know. All right, so we've got about 8 minutes left. So So I want to maybe recap on a lot of the things we talked about of what's coming up. Memberships, you offer memberships too, correct?
We do. And right now, obviously, you know, not a lot of people are buying memberships because we you know, our doors are closed until we have our grand opening. However, I believe you can still buy a membership right now at the old prices.
Okay.
Now, I know you're probably going to say, well, what are the new prices? I don't know that. And I am ashamed to say that I don't know that. But we will continue memberships just as we had before. There'll be, you know, a family membership, as well as, you know, like a membership that's more geared towards like just two people coming, you know, like a grandparent and a child.
Sure.
And then of course the huge.
Right.
Family
and that's
membership.
Part of the uncertainty of the price points, because we are changing our membership structure to be more accommodating to people. You know, we did find that there was a lot of just a parent and a child or a grandparent and a child that were coming in. And so we wanted to make sure that we had something available for them as well. And then, some people, they might think, oh, well I want to wait for a membership. And as Robert said, you know, you can get them right now at the old prices. But you also will get the entirety of your membership time frame. So normally memberships are a year, but since we're not open, that year does not start the day of purchase. It starts the day of opening. So you will get that extension. So if you want to grab one now, you're not going to be, you know, 3 months out because we haven't opened yet. It's going to start once we open, and then you'll get all the way till the following year.
And one of the things that that is new about membership, we're doing what's called an open arms membership, and that is completely new and for low and moderate income families. In the past, we just had, you know, ways of offering admission, but we never had a membership. And you know, it's nice to invite somebody in as a guest, but it's really nice to have them part of your family.
And have them say, I'm a member of
Exactly. Yeah. You know, there's something about that sense of belonging that is really important. So the Open Arms membership, same parameters. It will be for people and families who use an EBT card, have SNAP benefits. And it will only cost $25 for the entire year.
Wow.
And I think it's up to four people, or maybe it's six. I'm not sure.
I don't know.
But, you know, enough for the whole family to visit is the idea.
Yes.
So,
yeah.
And, you know, they make, a membership makes a perfect Christmas gift.
It does.
And, or a birthday gift.
Absolutely.
Or an anytime gift.
Or anytime gift. But, yeah, I mean, that's what a great way for a parent to buy a family membership or whatever for Christmas.
Yeah.
And, you know, that's a great thing. Yeah.
And we do have a lot of that. I actually, not too long ago before we closed, I had somebody come in and she bought a membership for herself. She bought one for her daughter, I believe. And then there was another member. She bought three memberships to make sure that the entire extended family had the ability to come
That's
in.
Great.
And it was really great. And she just could not speak highly enough about how she felt about the museum and why she felt comfortable purchasing three memberships at once.
I hear it all the time. I mean, people that I'm in contact with rave about the museum and what it's done for their kids. And, of course, like we said, when they were kids, they developed an affinity to it and want to get their kids involved.
Yeah.
But, hey, offer a free helicopter ride. You'll get a lot of people joining in.
This might be the best idea yet.
And I do think that the people who have loved the museum in the past, I think they're going to be very pleasantly surprised at how much more we're going to be able to offer in this new space.
Oh, my gosh, yeah. And
if
the setting is the setting is nice, it's easy to get to, probably great parking.
Absolutely
yes,
great parking. That's a huge plus for us. And from what I understand, the state is actually redoing the parking lots there over the next couple of years.
Okay.
So hopefully even more ample parking.
Yep.
And the other great thing for us is when we're on Caroline Street, if we want to go to the park, you know, we have to walk a group of people over to Congress Park. But now we're in the middle of the park.
Exactly.
So, you know, the access to outdoor education.
It'll be stepping right outside. I mean, we have a courtyard where we'll be able to do programs. We'll be able to just go outside. And some of the programs that have been restricted to being indoors, we're going to be able to go, it's a nice day. Let's just go outside and do the program.
And, you know, it's great for the staff, too, because you could have evening meetings And sit outside and listen to a concert and do your meeting. I mean, you know, you've got it made. I'm only kidding. But.
Crossing fingers that might be able to do more, you know, evening-related programs. I know they haven't been successful in the past,
sure.
But hopefully in this new situation that might be something that people are more interested in.
Yeah. You know, I was telling Ben, one of the things, I went to Catholic school, one of the things that we never had was music programs, and when I was graduated from 8th grade going into 9th, the public school offered our school the kids that were interested in music to take music lessons over the summer, free, and you could pick one of three instruments. I got stuck with the clarinet because I couldn't blow into the trumpet and the drums.
Sure.
I'm so uncoordinated that I couldn't do the drums. But anyway, what they did was SPAC made available orchestra tickets and ballet tickets that we could go to free. So they would take a bus once or twice a week up to SPAC. You know, whoever wanted to go that were taking music programs, and it opened up my eyes anyway, to the ballet and to the orchestra, which I never would have experienced if I hadn't done that. And that's a way, that's a way that you learn to appreciate something by being right there.
Absolutely.
And it's amazing.
Arts education and the exposure to the arts is just so important. And I think also what you're touching on is we are so fortunate to now be the neighbors of so many great organizations that are all about the arts and dance and music and theater and... It's such a great neighborhood to be in.
It is.
And to share resources with these wonderful organizations.
Exactly. You can offer more.
You're stronger together.
Yes, you are. All right. I want you to recap now in the 2 minutes we have left.
Sure.
Talk about what you want to bring up, what you want to make known here.
Well, so the museum is moving, as everyone knows, moving from the Caroline Street location to the Lincoln Baths building. On South Broadway. We anticipate opening in the summer of 2022. Hopefully the week of the 4th of July is the plan right now. We're still $300,000 away from our goal. This project has been about a $3.5 million project to bring this fantastic resource of the Children's Museum that has been a part of the Saratoga community for the last 32 years.
Wow.
We are so thrilled to continue to offer education not just to the kids of Saratoga, but the children of Saratoga County and beyond. We serve the 11 counties of the Capital Region now.
Our reach has gotten much, much further.
Yeah.
Yes.
11 counties.
Yep. And now that we're doing all of the outreach education in schools, in libraries, at community centers, through our partnership with CMOST, we're everywhere. And it is just a wonderful opportunity to bring hands-on education to kids of all ages. We typically have been known to serve the younger set. You know, the birth to 4 year range is the popular group that you'll see in the museum during a regular day, because obviously the other kids are at school.
Yep.
But we do serve all these other kids. You know, we serve all the way up to about 12 years old. And many of the new programs that we just brought on, the science and engineering programs, those are all the way up to sixth grade.
Yeah.
So the museum is doing a lot. You know, I know a lot of people just think it's a place to go with your kids, but there is so much more going on. And
that's it.
If you're looking to support us, remember March 31st, 9 miles east.
That's right.
Head over there. Just let them know that you're coming because of us, and we really appreciate that. And just, you know, we have our social media, our Facebook, and anywhere else. Just, you know, keep an eye out for us and just see. We have a lot of, we're trying to do a lot more. So, you know, the events that are coming up and all the ways that you can help support the museum, there are a great many ways. So if you are a fan of the museum, you know, we'd love to have your support. We'd love for you to be part of our community, part of our family.
And what's our website?
Yeah, I was going to ask
you. www.cmssny.org. But if you type in Children's Museum at Saratoga in Google, it's the first thing that pops up.
Okay. And Facebook page?
Facebook, same thing, Children's Museum at Saratoga. You can find us there. You can also, if you go to our website, there's links right at the top. You can get to our Facebook page. We also are on Instagram. We're on TikTok. We do some Twitter. Not as much, but there are definitely places where you can find our information. We try and get our information out as much as possible
sure.
in all those places.
But I have to tell you, your website is fantastic, and it has so much information on it.
That
that's, CMSSNY.org.
Mm-hmm.
That's the place to go because you can find out everything. I mean, you really can.
And if you're looking to find out what the, like, actually see what the progress of the museum is, we have our pictures on social media, and I'm in the process of trying to get those up onto the website so that you can actually see the kind of the timeline of that progress comparisons from, you know, one set to the next.
Excellent. All right. Well, hey, listen, I appreciate you being here today.
We appreciate you having us.
Anytime. And I probably would like to ask you back or plan on being back the closer you get to opening.
Yeah. We would love
so
that.
So we can, you know, we can do something with that also.
Mm-hmm.
And then even during the summer, I don't do the show, but I do podcasts.
Mm-hmm.
And the fellow that comes after me does play the podcast. So, you know, we can... keep up to date on what's happening and any events that you have coming up, okay?
Absolutely.
That sounds,
all right.
That sounds great.
Thank you. Now, thanks for being with us this morning. And again, I mentioned that Homer is not going to be here today. And fortunately, I fill in for his 3 hours. And I'm going to put some music on right now, and then we'll go into that show there. So thanks for being with us on Talk Saratoga.